Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello, I'm your host, Effie Pilarino, and today I have the pleasure to connect with a digital colleague from LinkedIn, Sharat Chandra, who is an evangelist of innovation in fintech, and specifically the more edge innovations that are around blockchain and other emerging technologies in financial services. And I'd like to welcome you first, Sharat.
Thanks, Effie. Pleasure to be part of this conversation.
Sharat, you are always one of my go-to sources in terms of what is going on in India and in the East. I always think of India as one of the leaders in innovating in DPIs, in digital public infrastructures that have huge network effects, and I'd like to call them not only financial network effects, but economic network effects, because those are broader than just financial. And especially when we're talking about countries like India with huge populations, diverse populations, and diverse challenges at the same time. So we're here to discuss one of the recent developments that have been highlighted in the media around the digital rupee, around UPI, and so on. So let's start with a little bit background around the digital rupee. Why has the central bank, RBI in India, decided to go ahead with a digital rupee, and what does it look like?
Right. So digital rupee, the motivations behind launching a digital rupee were multifold. One was bring down the cash in circulation, because demonetization, despite its good intentions, though it gave a flip to the digital economy and digital payments, cash again came back in circulation. So one of the primary reasons was to reduce dependency on the cash. And digital currencies have become the de facto mode of payment or de facto mode of transaction, as far as India has is concerned. I mean, RBI in its wisdom was right in rolling out a currency which is in tune or which is in sync with the general people in the country. That is second. Another reason was to put a curb on anti-money laundering activities, because cash often leads to these illicit and illegal activities like terror financing, so on and so forth, right? So that was also one of the main reasons. One reason I can also maybe bring into this conversation is to reduce the dependency on UPI. Because now UPI, I can give you one statistic where in the month of October, we reached or clocked 11 billion transactions. So we as a country, India as a country, hasn't reached the complete digitalization as far as digital payments is concerned. Imagine if we're clocking 1 billion transactions per day. The UPI needs to have a complementary mechanism where people can go to and make payments. So this is where...
What are the limitations of UPI? Why UPI can't on its own reach that? I mean, it's already... How old is it? It's what...
Close to a decade now. To a decade. Yeah. I will tell you a couple of reasons why UPI... may not be able to scale given the current infrastructure what we have, because the current payment systems what we have is payments and settlements are two disjointed processes. Payments and settlements, they happen in batches. They do not happen simultaneously or on the same chain. But if you look at the very nature of a programmable currency or money, you can settle transactions immediately.
Correct.
So that brings the efficiency what is needed in a payment and settlement system. I'll give you another stat where, again, this is quite old, where NPCI had a technical decline rate or TDR of 1.35%. So imagine a case where we are having more than a billion transactions per day, because that's what the goal of the government is. that we should be clocking 1 billion transactions per day. Even 1.35% is a significant number.
Right.
And especially people who are new to digital payments, if they are faced with transaction failures, they'll be put off. They will not
take
digital payments the right way, right? They will again go back to cash.
Yeah.
So another reason is to create, first of all, create an alternative and supportive mechanism to support UPI. Second is, since UPI is free as of now, and it cannot be free forever.
Right.
Right.
So the cost is right now taken, the government basically.
Right.
Yeah.
So in fact, RBI has something called PIDF, Payment Infrastructure Development Fund, where close to 10,000 crores worth of money is supposed to be put, 50% by the payment entities like banks, card networks, and 50% by RBI itself. But again, coming back to the point of how do you create a sustainable or alternative payment mechanism, this is where CBDC has some value, because UPI will no longer be free. And even in one of the statements by NPCI chief Dilip Aspe, he said that high value merchant payments or merchant transactions might attract some fee. Right. And I'll say this is pretty logical, because you need to incentivize the payment network or payment ecosystem participants. You can't have a free model always. So I think one of the ways would be to increase digital currency adoption is to make CBDC or digital rupee free for people in general. But for UPI, for certain transactions or certain categories of transactions, it will attract a fee.
So, would it be logical to expect that the lower value transactions may remain free, and higher value transactions will maybe have a fee? Would that make sense?
Yes. And I can foresee CBDC being used in, or digital rupee being used in, both low value as well as high value transactions. For example, I'll give you one instance of there's a state in northern part of India called Bihar, where Yes Bank, one of the leading banks in India, has started allowing commercial tax payments to be paid using digital rupee. So imagine tax payments being, especially commercial tax payments, are significantly higher. You can use CBDC or digital rupee to make those payments. And you can still incentivize people to not pay any transaction fee on top of that. Right. I think these are some of the ways that adoption can happen. But UPI is not going away anywhere. It will still be the preferred choice of payments for people who still haven't onboarded the digital payments journey.
Okay. So it is the best way to sort of make the transition from, you know, cash or traditional financial services into the digital world.
Right. In fact, very recently, NPCI allowed high-value payments for, let's say, hospitals, right, using UPI. I think earlier cap was very low, but now it's close to 500,000 rupees.
500,000 right? Rupees is what in value, and how does it correspond to, you know, like a visit at a doctor, a day in a hospital, to give us a context?
Yeah. So let's say for any normal, let's say, for example, if somebody goes for an eye treatment like cataract, right?
Yeah.
I think bill can easily touch about 100,000 rupees, right? But let's say if there's another surgery or another medical intervention which is needed, those bills can easily touch 500,000 or even 100,000, depends upon the disease. Now, paying through card will have its limitations, because there's a limit on the card. If you're doing an online transfer, again, you need to add the hospital account and then make the transfer, right? So the preferred way would be UPI, where you can pay through UPI and get it done.
Right. And you spoke already about some cases where the digital rupee is used. So we're talking about a retail digital rupee, a retail CBDC. Mm-hmm. But do I understand correctly that RBI is both piloting a retail one and a wholesale one, or not yet?
So there are pilots both in the wholesale as well as retail segment.
Yeah.
Wholesale one is mostly about buying and selling of government securities or interbank transfers. On the retail front, the RBI is kind of putting banks on notice and saying that we have to clock 1 million transactions every month. Right. And that's where some of the banks even started giving out employee benefits in central bank digital currency. that has also reported in the media. I think that's also one of the good ways to enable users or make them used to how a digital currency works, so that going forward, because this is the future of money, we all understand that, right? Going forward, the very nature of money is going to be changed. Why not start using it from early on?
I mean, if I look at how China has been rolling out its own CBDC, you know, paying some public employees is one method, or, you know, offering some public transportation tickets or passes. Those make sense because they are, it's a start to adopt, and then you can go to more sort of private and mass things and integrations at the end of the day.
Right. Even in India, in one of the states in India called Kerala, where the Kochi Metro, especially for metro transportation, some of the banks are allowing the usage of CBDC. So I think for transit payments or even utility payments, CBDC is a great case where you can take some button off the UPI. Right. Okay. Because even low, I mean, especially in Bangalore, let's say, even if you want to have a cup of tea or a cup of any drink, people prefer using UPI, paying through UPI, right? Which does put a load on the system, right? Let's say even if you're using UPI to make even a 5 rupee payment or a 10 rupee payment, it does add to the load, right? So especially some of those transactions can be taken off, and maybe CBDC can be the preferred way for making those transactions.
Now, if we go into detail, and are you a user of CBDC? Have you received or transferred CBDC? So does it work like you have to open a new wallet from that's provided from your banking provider?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you can have from your banking provider both the option of paying with UPI and a wallet with a QR code, basically, right?
Yes.
To pay with your CBDC.
Yeah, the good part is the current UPI QR code is interoperable with the digital rupee QR code. So it makes the transfer very seamless. So I can just scan any QR code and start paying through even digital currency. When the pilot started, there are different QR codes for a digital rupee payment, as well as a normal UPI payment. But RBI enabled QR code interoperability between these two systems. So now on, you can use the same QR code and you have the choice of making payments through CBDC, as long as the other person who's part of the transaction has a digital rupee wallet.
Very interesting, this interoperability. And I'm always thinking the parallel with China, how they, you know, integrated with the big super apps there, and how that that happens. Are there major security, cybersecurity concerns with these QR codes, whether from UPI or for the digital rupee, in your experience in everyday life, beyond what the media reports?
So personally, I have not experienced any cybersecurity downside as far as using UPI QR codes are concerned. But we all have to admit that there are QR code scams, and this is where there's a lot of literacy and awareness which needs to happen, especially for people who are new to digital payments in tier two and tier three cities of the India or even remote villages. So that's where the people are more prone to falling prey to scams, right? So QR code scams are there. I can't deny that. But personally, I haven't experienced any friction with respect to making payments either via UPI or through digital rupee.
Yeah. It's funny because here in the West, we are subject to scams through push notifications, you know, from all these digital payment, the peer-to-peer payment apps and so on. And I guess we will be starting to feel that with QR codes as the adoption progresses. Sharat, my question going forward is the RBI setting itself up for failure by, you know, going on and launching a new infrastructure, a DPI for the CBDC, the digital rupee, while there's been this huge success of UPI. Will everybody be watching and expecting that type of success and so fast? And how do you feel about that?
I would say the expectations are high because with UPI, we have scripted one of the best payment success stories, right? So we as a nation, being an emerging economy, we have kind of leapfrogged and become the front runner with respect to payments innovation. So there's evident pressure on the industry as a whole, right? How do we re-script that success story as far as central bank digital currency is concerned? And this is where I think we have to give due credit to RBI, because they're going slow, but they're going in a very pragmatic and very thoughtful manner. So, and this is where RBI has been, or the government has been making some strategic tie-ups. For example, there's a tie-up with Central Bank of UAE, where the Indian rupee and their currency dirham is interchangeable, first of all. And Central Bank of UAE also has a CBDC project, even RBI's CBDC project. Now, these two countries are working together in the context of having a CBDC bridge. And much of the information is already available. So imagine a case where most of the Indian diaspora or Indian travelers, they're going to Dubai, they'll be able to buy a cup of coffee or a cup of tea using a digital rupee or even digital dirham. So I think RBI is very, very conscious and very, very forward-looking by going slow, not going so fast, because this is not a race any country has to go there and get first. But again, idea is to get it right. How we do it the right way, and how do we protect the people who are new to the system?
Yeah.
So RBI has a public good objective as well, where the idea is to protect the digital consumers.
Yeah. Sharat, you shared the other day a piece of news that I found very interesting, that RBI is, or maybe the Bankers Association in India is creating a shared website for the banks around the digital rupee. What is that about?
So I think this is an initiative towards bringing all banks on one particular platform, and then allowing and popularizing the use cases of central bank digital currency.
Okay.
So what's happening, how the pilot started was, it started with a couple of banks where the closed user groups, COGs, and certain selected individuals were given the first access to use central bank digital currency rupee. But now RBI is opening up, and in fact, almost all the banks. So we have close to 12 to 13 banks in India, where all of them are popularizing the usage of central bank digital currency. But the point is, there's no single platform where you can see, okay, this particular bank is also allowing users to transact through central bank digital currency. I think that is one. Second is, how do we build upon the use cases? I think this initiative by Indian Banks Association is a step in the right direction, because CBDC will get traction or adoption only when there are credible use cases.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Which can solve pain points of the industry. Let's say MSME lending for that particular matter, right? Or even micro insurance.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So those are the other areas. I can foresee a lot of synergy as far as ONDC, or the Open Network for Digital Commerce, and digital rupee, because we all know that the future of money is programmable. It's digital, right? And since ONDC also is being taken to different other countries, the team behind ONDC, they're also exploring how the same model, the way we have taken UPI global, by taking it to France and other countries, how can we also take the ONDC, or Open Network for Digital Commerce, to other countries where we have strategic interest and where we have bilateral ties. So this is where a new form of money, which can even run on ONDC and UPI rails. So if you look at UPI, we have UPI arrangements in Singapore, Bhutan, even in France. Even in London, the UPI is present, right? And Middle East countries. So we can envision a world where central bank digital currency, like a digital rupee, will start running on UPI rails, which goes beyond India. It goes into Europe and also creates a, I would say, complementary payment system.
Yes, and especially for trade, right?
Right.
Imports, exports. Because,
right.
Okay, now, do I understand correctly that where the UPI has been exported, in the first list of countries. It's really for retail use, meaning, you know, Indians,
remittances,
remittances and tourism, if you want, you know, both ways, an Indian travels to that country and vice versa. But now, if the ONDC vision is comes to fruition, it will be more around small business or medium business or large businesses trade.
Right. In fact, one of the visions of ONDC is to move from digital commerce to open finance. So ONDC started as a transition or a step away from a platform-based economy, with a platform-based economy controlled by big techs like Amazon and Walmarts of the world, to create a model where it's open to all, and all the businesses which are not digital native can come on top of ONDC. The transition is from digital commerce to open finance, where now even insurance companies, healthcare companies are coming on top of ONDC. And they're building products suited for this new world order. Right, where there's a conscious decision to move away from platforms controlled by big techs of the world.
Interesting. So ONDC, for those that don't know, is also a DPI infrastructure.
Yes. Open network for digital commerce, the way UPI has been envisioned, the same holds true for the digital commerce.
Yeah. So if we were to make a mind map of the DPIs, we have Aadhaar, right, for the digital identity. We have UPI for payments, ONDC for digital commerce. And now we could add the CBDCs as they are rolled out, because that's a DPI too, correct?
Yeah. In fact, if you look at BRICS as a group in general, right, there's a wider consensus among all members that they should have a common reserve currency,
yes,
or a currency which can be used by all the member nations, because there's a wider acceptance among people or countries in general to move away from dollars hegemony, right?
Yes.
So a dollar, and I mean, though we can't discount dollars dominance in the near future, but in future we might see strong regional reserve currencies. The way digital yuan is being promoted by China, because China does control a significant amount of trade. I think for other parts of the world where, let's say BRICS for that matter, where India and other countries have a significant trade presence. So I can foresee a central bank digital currency or CBDC bridges, especially on group in groups like BRICS,
yes,
playing a significant role. And dollar will not be able to play a major role there, because most of these countries will agree to trade in bilateral currencies.
Yes, I mean, I think that because of other geopolitical reasons, it's kind of tough to imagine an agreement of a new CBDC,
right,
on top of
mm-hmm.
for the BRICS or other, you know, countries that want to join. I think it's difficult. I think it's difficult to imagine a CBDC that's a basket.
Yeah.
Like stable coin, but building bridges like the one that you mentioned, that seems a much more viable, not from a technology perspective, from a consensus perspective.
Yeah.
And
this is
preserving, you know, the monetary policies of each country, and but at the same time, enabling something that is beneficial for everybody.
Yeah. This is where RBI has been very forward-looking in terms of creating those payment linkages. So we have now payment linkage with Singapore's or MAS's fast payment systems, right? And because significant Indian diaspora stays in Singapore and other APAC countries. So that's where RBI has been also going strategically and making those bridges, I would say, or payment system arrangements, where at least the remittance part, because India is the biggest player when it comes to inward remittances,
yeah,
right? So
yeah.
And there's a proper or a sound reasoning behind this entire process.
Yes. It's very interesting how fast these developments in a way have been happening. I mean, the last, I would say, 2 years, I feel that the speed has picked up. And we're talking about entities like central banks that are not entities, you know, that are going to do things fast and break things, the Silicon Valley type of mentality, right? We're talking about entities that have strategic responsibilities to the economies and political and economic responsibilities, and are not going to be experimenting and moving fast for the sake of acquiring knowledge. Sharat, I'd like to thank you very much for all these insights and the color, as we used to say in the trading business, that you bring, which is invaluable. As you're on the ground, you are somebody who's involved in innovation. You have the pulse, if you want, of what is going on. And I'd like to thank you very much for sharing this knowledge. And let's keep in touch and have a revisit later this year, as I'm sure there'll be more developments coming out of India. The commitment is there. You seem to be, if you want, confident that this will continue. As I said, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge.
Thanks, Afi. Pleasure to be part of this conversation. Great talking to you.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.